2023 MDAC meeting. Thanks for coming. We are recording this, so the meeting will be available on the Treasury's webpage after the session is complete and technology magic works its due course, so that commissioners that are not able to attend, as well as the public that is not currently in attendance, will be able to get the benefit of the discussion after the fact. This is Christine Reynolds. I'm serving as chair of the MDAC. It's great to see everyone. We'll go around and do a quick roll call and introduction of everyone just to confirm who all is here. We'll start with those of us in the room.
Yeah. I'm Jacqueline Knight, and I am the treasurer's designee to the MDAC commission.
Great. Okay.
I'm Anae Hausner, and I am the admin for the MDAC.
Let's see, Sharon.
Hi, I'm Sharon Voida, Chief Financial Administrative Officer at the City of Bend, and I'm the League of Oregon Cities representative on MDAC.
Bryce?
Good afternoon, Bryce Stoddick, I'm a public member.
And Eileen? She was on.
Yeah, she's here.
Amy, muted.
Yeah, she's muted. She's still muted.
Maybe try unmuting Eileen. I think we've got, you may be double muted somewhere.
She's still muted.
How about that?
That works.
Okay. I'm Eileen Hendricks with the Port of Morrow Special Districts member.
Great. Thanks so much. And that gives us a quorum of members of the commission and any members of the public in attendance.
We have Colin Hussar from the Debt Management Division in attendance. Colin, please recognize yourself.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey, Colin. Thanks for joining. And if there's anyone else that wants to be so noted for the record?
Everybody in attendance.
Okay. Well, again, thanks, everybody, for coming. And it's been a while since we've all gathered and appreciate the time together. We wanted to review the agenda before you, the report of the Treasury team that has been so diligently working together to put together the MDAC annual report, and then we'll highlight a couple of current developments in the municipal disclosure market, and then also touch base on some other matters that are coming up in the public finance community, and look forward to and welcome any comments or questions from commissioners throughout the process. Given that we're all online, if you are able to raise your hand using the raise your hand function on Teams, those that have joined virtually, that will help us know who wants to talk. And again, appreciate everyone's time gathering and review of the report. So with that, I'll turn it to the summary report presentation. And I believe Jacqueline.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Chair Reynolds. And thank you, committee commission members, for your attendance today and your diligence in reading the report that's been prepared by the debt management staff here. With this presentation, we just intend to highlight a few things, a few items, notable items in the report. And we left the rankings out because we did not want to address the rankings in this presentation, but it is in the report. I called it the ranking files.
There you go.
In terms of the topics that this presentation summary is going to cover, it's going to cover the issuance summary for calendar year 2022, the POB issuance, I think that was the last time we met, and some OSBG program considerations that we'd like to highlight. So turning to the issuance summary, And this is all in your report, but just to highlight a few key points. What we have seen in the overall municipal market is that issuance was down about 19% from 2021, according to CIFMA data, with refundings and taxable issuance of debt experiencing the largest decline. In Oregon, local issuers placed about $3.35 billion in debt in 2022. This was significantly lower, about 41.6% decline from the 2021 level. And that was attributable in large part to the following. There was about $1.5 billion combined decline in current and advanced refunding in 2022 from 21. In addition, we had fewer issuances of pension obligation bonds to the tune of $869 million. And between those two, that accounts for more than 90% of the difference. So the rest is just maybe modestly less new money issuances. At the end of December 2022, outstanding indebtedness of Oregon local issuers was $39 billion, and that was $1.3 billion above the 2021 level. And what that means, Oregon issuers placed $3.35 billion, but our debt in the aggregate only increased $1.3 billion, which means that on a net basis, local governments amortized more debt or repaid more debt than they incurred in 2022. And that pretty much summarized that. The next page illustrates some of our data. And again, I caution this data is, it's pretty good for government work. But I won't say that it is 100% accurate because it's based on information placed in the system by various parties, and we have our biennial verification reports, which is when we reconcile the information. So we think it's as good, it's the best information we have at this time. So the 2022 debt issuance that's in the bond tracker system, we have it here by counties on the upper left. Multnomah was the largest issuer in 2022, then Washington County and Lane counties. And the remainder of the counties came with a little over a billion after you factored in the three largest issuers. In terms of purposes for which those bonds were issued, education was the largest purpose, followed by transportation, then pensions, and then utilities. And so we have a broad spectrum of purposes from which bonds were issued. The chart on the bottom is shows the same purpose by the same issuance by purpose, and the red dots that you see are dots related to the secondary access on the right, which are the number of transactions or number of bond issues related to those transactions. So for instance, on the education, over 830 million was issued, and it was about 26 transactions. So that correlates to the graph on the top. On the next slide, we look at the outstanding indebtedness for 2022 and then the trends in issuance over the last 5 years and outstanding principal trends over time for the local government issues. So again, at the end of December 31, 2022, there were 38.818, I think a number was not adjusted previously. Okay, it was rounded. 38.8 billion outstanding, rounded to 39 billion for local government issuers, and is categorized by schools, cities, boards, hospital facilities. Some of these probably could have been combined. You know, what is vector control?
Mosquitoes.
It's very important. Okay, I'm learning something. And so in either case, we have all the issuances, all the outstandings by type of, or school district is the largest at $13.5 billion, and then cities, and then ports, and then hospitals. The chart to the top right here shows categories of issuances, you know, by issuer type over the last 5 years, stacked on each other. So in 2018, we saw a year with probably a little bit of refunding because we were still digesting the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. The blue bars on the bottom represent schools. The cities represent the orange bars, the ports are the green bars, and you can follow the list. So we can see that the height of issuance occurred in 2020, and also 2021 was a high issuance year as well, and what the decline, the relative decline has been since 2022, you can see that virtually in all categories, issuance declined from 2021 to 22. I'm happy to answer any questions as I go along. And the chart to the bottom right shows, again, the volume, the outstanding principal each year for the last 5 years, since 2017. And clearly that's grown significantly. We've seen growth in outstanding indebtedness, not just at the local government level, but at the state level over that period. Any questions? Okay, the next slide. The last time we met, we discussed POB issuance, and we appreciate all the comments that we had and all the input from everyone, and the fact that we were able to come to conclusion with guidelines for SB 1049. And since that time, the guidelines went into effect in July 2021, and we saw quite a few issuances of POBs since that time. So, and we also report this information to the State Debt Policy Advisory Committee as requested, as required by law. So since the OERs were amended in 2021, local issuers have sold $1.88 billion in pension obligation bonds to fund PERS unfunded liability. The issuances, as you can see by the chart, the interest rates, the bond TIC, for the most part, benefited from extraordinarily low rates in 2021. And we could see the impact at the bottom with rates increasing in 2022 due to the Fed actions. And that explains also why issuance of POBs probably declined to some part, to some extent. Another item to mention, as of June 30th, if we include all the POBs that have principal outstanding since 2021, the pre-2019 issuance as well, we have a total of $3.51 billion outstanding for local governments. These POBs generally use the fund diversion agreement. And I'll spend a moment on that. The fund diversion agreement, based on my understanding, and we have a qualified attorney in the room to discuss this. But in a layman's term, basically, for state aid that goes to school district, there's an agreement entered into between the issuer and the trustee and the State Department of Education to divert funds to the trustee to pay the debt service, state aid that's otherwise due to the school district or community college, to the trustee to pay debt service on these bonds. Because the monies are coming directly from the state to the trustee, it's a credit enhancement for the bonds. Mm-hmm. It's viewed positively by investors and the credit rating agencies, and the issuers benefit from that by lower interest funds.
Certainty of debt service and funds coming in to be
repaid. Yeah. Debt service funds. Mm-hmm. And state intercept mechanisms are not infrequent in the industry. They're used all over the country.
Yep.
So that's not a new phenomenon here. The next item is the OSBG program, which, you know, raised some sensitivity from my perspective here at the state. And one of the reasons it has, one, is because of the growth in the program, and two, because of the way the bond rating agency look at the state. So the state's credit. More recently, Moody's has placed increased emphasis on contingent liabilities of the state. In addition, we have certain disclosure requirements that if a guarantee is in excess of, what's the threshold? $200 million, which would be the state's materiality level. We have to make a disclosure on that particular guarantee. So recently we did a guarantee for, was it Multnomah?
Portland School District.
School District, and one of the Multnomah County school districts. And we had to make in the tune of like $400 million
or so. $420 million.
And we had to make a disclosure regarding that. I just want to point that out because I think this program was instituted to provide a broad range of Oregon communities with access to the capital markets and access to favorable funding terms for their bonds to encourage education in the state. I think it's a worthwhile program, and our fees are really low on that program. It's about 3 basis points, which I think you can't beat in the market, which is explains why it's been so heavily used. And it's been used increasingly since 2008, when the bond insurers exited, when there were fewer bond insurers, private bond insurers in the market. As of June 30, 2022, the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program guaranteed $9.4 billion in debt. And this is roughly about 24% of all outstanding debt of all Oregon local issuers, and 62% of all outstanding debt of school and community college districts. When we think about it in the scope of the state's own debt, it's almost on par with the total amount of debt that the state has issued, and more than the general obligation bonds of the state has issued, because the state only has about $6.7 billion of outstanding general obligation bonds. We recognize the credit structure of these OSBG program, that there's a tax levy that is looked to first for payment of debt service, and then the guarantee. And that works. And when we look at our data tables, which we also provide to the SEDPAC, many communities, we look at just the state aid and not the tax levy for the reporting to the SEDPAC. Many of the communities are below 50% their state aid. So it is being used for its intended purposes. It's far reaching. We do have 4 small communities that are coastal communities where the guarantee exceeds their state aids by multiples, not just more than 100%, multiples. We find that to be a risky position for those counties and we've made the state individuals, both in the legislature as well as here at Treasury, aware of that fact. And we've been reporting it for a few years now. The communities have not changed. Generally, those are really small communities. And I just want to point out a couple of things with the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program. In looking at it, we brought this to attention of management. We said, okay, what would we do if a community defaulted? Options for the treasurer are to go to the Common School Fund to pay debt service, to siphon off state aid to the local school district, which I find to be, I don't want this to be recorded, but find to be somewhat interesting that it would be a bank going to someone who's defaulted on a loan and asking for additional monies. You know, so a community in distress is not the right community to take away the aid from. It just seems penalizing. Mm-hmm. Where the state can issue debt. The bottom line is that from our view of it, at least internally, there seems to be a gap between the timing of a potential default and the timing in which funds can actually be raised to cure the default. And so we've made the state aware of this gap, and the state is reviewing all of those considerations. No determinations have been made, no recommendations have been proffered, but we wanted to also make the school districts aware of this particular issue. In fiscal year 2022, bonds guaranteed under the OSBG program had $848 million in debt service, which represent 5.68% of state net general fund revenues, again, higher than the state's own general obligation bonds, and 18.93% of state aid for school and community college districts. And the state aid is not all monies going to schools, but what is considered state aid, which is about $4.6 billion or so. And combined, when we look at the OSBG guaranteed debt service and the debt service on pension bonds supported by fund diversion agreements, the debt service totaled $1.17 billion in fiscal 22 and aggregated to about 26% of state aid for school and community college districts in FY22. We consider this to be sort of a looming issue that will need to be addressed in the future. One, because of the level of issuance. Two, because it seems that the use of the OSBG program is the default position, even if we have large established school districts that could probably access the market on their own credit with very little deviation from the state's credit. We wanted the communities to be mindful of that. Any questions before we move on?
I'm sorry, Jacqueline, I have an unrelated question. Because the MDAC has met so rarely, I did quickly just check in. I don't know that all of the members of the MDAC mailing list in the community received notice of the meeting, which is why I think we don't have very many members of the public finance community on this meeting. So just as an administrative note going forward, I think we need to probably do some investigation as to how folks are receiving meeting notices, because
I use the distribution list that's been used in the past.
I think that somehow those emails aren't actually hitting people's inboxes.
Oh, okay.
Because I just quickly emailed, frankly, an active other bond lawyer and banker who would normally be on this meeting.
Yeah, usually the bankers
folks are here on the meeting, and both of them did not receive notice of the meeting. And none of my colleagues at work, I think none of them. Anyhow, I knew about it, so they knew about it. But I think we've got some communications hiccups with whatever going forward. So
I think what we will do in response to this, so thank you for bringing that to our attention. Perhaps we'll distribute the binder materials to those individuals.
Yeah, we should definitely be sure all of the meeting agenda materials are available as a public meeting matter. And we may want to the extent we want to schedule sort of a quick addendum meeting follow up for members of the public to join for any comment period or something. We can look to do that as a scheduling matter, just to be sure there's group participation. So, and then back to this OSBG program, Jacqueline, you said that this is something that is on the radar screen. Is this something that you're looking for additional public comment and discourse on in advance of the next major legislative session in 2025, or what is the thinking there?
I am the designee for the treasurer.
Yes.
I stand alone. And this is a looming issue for the state. It is my job to respond to issues that I think could have an impact on the state's credit ratings and overall risk profile to the communities and the leadership team here at Treasury. And we have elevated this discussion to the leadership team at Treasury. This program is so important to the state and so valuable. I'm not sure that there's anyone who can solve it, but I do think that statewide community involvement from the MDAC, from the League of Cities and all these other organizations statewide, we need to come to terms with this, that this is not an infinite resource, and it will need, in my professional opinion, there will need to be something done about it. So we are looking for input, suggestions. We'd be happy to provide any clarifying information and guidance from the communities, because we want to make sure that the communities that need it the most get it.
Are there any questions from any of the commissioners online? And I would note that for the record that the school board representative, Brett Yancey, is not on the line, who I suspect probably would have comments and questions should he be here. So seeing no questions, maybe we table this topic and put it on a future agenda for broader community discussion.
Yes.
Great.
Okay, on the next slide, I'm going to have Renee talk about this broadly, but we've been diligent about trying to keep the bond tracker system updated, and we have an ongoing effort to continue to make this system that is quite antiquated a little bit more user-friendly, faster, and more organized in terms of the data, so we can provide better reporting at all levels. So, Anne, just if you could go through some of the updates that we've made to the system and are considering making.
Thank you. So one of the things, the big things that we changed was for the overlapping debt report. Since 2021, all ODVRs are pulled from the bond tracker by region and saved on the shared drive for future use before the annual upload of the updated tax information overrides the prior year's data in the system. This allows the local governments to access the ODVRs well after the cutoff date and ensures record retention rules are being followed appropriately by the staff. And it also allows us to keep the information for the school districts and allows us to help with turnover. We've seen a lot of turnover in the local governments, so we're able to keep apprised on that also. Pertaining to the pension obligation bonds, in 2021, the process of tracking the POBs drastically changed to include an adaptation within Bond Tracker to form accessible POB data that can be used along with an already utilized POB tracking spreadsheet and guideline for each issuance. To allow DMD to accurately and efficiently report POB information to outside entities in a timely manner, this also allows DMD to closely monitor the POB activities. With regards to the debt limit verification process, every other year, local governments go through a process to verify their debt with DMD. Starting in 2024, the verification process will be done almost exclusively using electronic resources such as email, electronic scanning, and drive sharing.
Can I ask you to pause on this one?
Okay.
This requires further explanation.
Yeah, okay.
When I came here, I heard that there were thousands of letters that had to be sorted and put into envelopes by members of our team.
That's
to
true.
Mail out to each local government, and sometimes there were redundancies.
Sure.
And there was over like 1,700 of these letters. And I was like, excuse me?
Facts for each person.
And, and in addition, with the overlapping debt report, once the new assessment data went in, the system would override last year and you could not get another assessment report. You couldn't get a copy of your assessment report the day after the fiscal year ended. So these two problems, these two fixes saved data. It, because of COVID, we couldn't come in to the office. Actually, we did have people coming in and we said, look, let's find our email list.
Right.
Let's update the contacts on Bond Tracker. Let's streamline the Bond Tracker system because there was duplication of records because Bond Tracker did not allow more than one contact per entity. So when a new person came, there was a new Bond Tracker record created. So we fixed all of that. I know it doesn't sound like much, but it was like bringing it into the 19th century.
I would observe that whatever the current Bond Tracker system is, it does have a lot of clunkiness to it. There used to be a web-based version. There is not. I don't know how many people were using that. We certainly were at ORIC, and that's no longer accessible. As a whole, filing with other systems in other states, notably just our neighbors to the north and south, both the Washington Department of Commerce program and the CDAC programs, I think the quality of the data that they're getting into their systems is probably something to, you know, for mutual treasury investigation to look at, that it's a much higher quality of data and better systems across the board.
Right.
I realize software and software systems come at a cost, but to the extent that tracking and understanding the debt profile of governments is, you know, part of the charge of the treasurer's office and debt management, it's something that merits further investigation.
So I will let Anne finish this list of updates, and then I will address.
And feel free to summarize, Christine. Given that the words are on the page as well. don't need to read verbatim. We appreciate the
diligence. Well, I wrote it. Just okay. The other thing is with inside Bond Tracker, there is sections in there that say purposes, bond types, and then some definitions. So one of the things that DMD is right now is currently working on writing out a comprehensive list. So entities outside of DMD can understand what those purposes, bond types, and definitions might be. So moving forward, we all have a better understanding of what that might mean, because everybody has a different definition of what, you know, general obligation bond mean, or, you know, what does, I can't think of an excuse,
full faith and credit
would also mean. So We're trying to do one where it's uniformed and it's a better understanding for anybody that wants to use the system moving forward. Also, the bond calendar in mid-2022 was moved to the new bond link web page, which is accessible at the link that you can see there too. It also provides cohesiveness outside for the investors who are looking to invest in more Oregon opportunities.
So now when the state issues, we've implemented a new investor relations portal that's through BondLink. It's an outside vendor, and it's accessible through www.buyoregonbonds.com. And we have a lot of data there for the state. We don't have local governments or other issuers, but we do have the bond calendar there as well. And I think now when you go to the treasurer's website, look for the bond calendar, it will bring you to the bond link.
We can fix that.
Good.
So we've been working here, but we've got a lot of work to do. Chair Reynolds' suggestion of a new system, it goes without saying. The system is antiquated. About a year and a half ago, I asked, when can we get a new system? Mm-hmm. I started, and people were kind of concerned with me because I just come up with these things. Let's go buy a new system. And it doesn't work that way in Treasury. I'm learning that just saying it doesn't make it come into being. So we have to budget for it. And then I was told that it was too late to budget for it in this upcoming biennium, that at the earliest we could look for it in the 2025-27 biennium. So I think, given what we've done with BondLink, I think the CIO here in Treasury has really internalize this issue of the bond tracker, because we have an entire team of IT that's devoted to us for all the issues that we face. Sometimes it's data entry issue, which is why we want to make sure that we have concise definitions of the various fields that need to be entered, so that we're all entering the same types of information in the system the same way, the same reporting. But even after all of that, the system is still clunky and it doesn't do some basic things. So I think someone approached me and said, we're going to build a new bond tracker system. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. We're going to build a system. But it will likely be in the 2025-27 budget authority. And that's our proposal.
I'm just knocking on wood.
Well, we've already articulated to IT so much of the shortcomings. Mm-hmm. They might, for the amount of resources they're giving us to work with the system, we might as well get a new system.
There you go.
Because it is costing us that much. Gotcha. To really support it.
Well, on behalf of all of us that use Bond Tracker and interface with it, we thank your IT team for their efforts and commend them for that.
So that concludes the Treasury's presentation for this meeting. And one of our goals for this meeting was, at minimum, to get an approval or for the annual report,
right,
subject to any revisions that are provided to us by the commission members.
And I believe that all the commission members have received versions of the report. Comments have come in and been incorporated to date. I'm not aware, at least by email, of any commissioners that have indicated they have other pending comments. I don't know.
The only one is Commissioner. Well, just she had some information about pertaining to some of the questions on the charts, and she had questions with some understanding pertaining to the difference between the N and the S on the general obligation.
Okay, I can try to address some of those, okay. Commissioner.
They should be on her comments there.
I do have them, so I will.
I printed out the report for Jacqueline to review there.
I'm going to do my best.
Okay. pull up the page around.
Okay, so I'm on page 6 of the comments, and the question was what do the N in paren and the S stand for in full faith and credit and GO bonds? There's some GO bonds or full faith and credit bonds that are issued and supported with general fund monies, and some that are self-supporting, like have other monies that come in to support those obligations. So I'll just make an analogy from the state's perspective. At the state level, we issue GO bonds for Oregon Veterans Affairs. They have the Veterans Welfare Program that provides loans to veterans. The loan payments come in and provide the payment repayments for the general obligation bonds that were issued. So we would consider those self-supporting general obligation bonds. Okay. And general obligation, no less.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with your description of the state's credit. I have some clarifications I might add as it relates to city, at least local okay. government issuances so in this regard.
Government issuance, we looked at our definitions page mm-hmm. and the local governments, it appears that, and we actually have a committee within our small team going through all of these definitions at this time, not just the purpose but the security feature, the mm-hmm. full faith and credit GO, etc. And we were trying to distinguish what is considered full faith and credit and what is considered GO. The GOs at the local government level looks like they need to have a voter approval.
Yes, that is correct.
And that is a distinguishing feature.
It is. Across the board for all local government issuances. Sharon, nod your head. As you were.
She also has a question.
Yes. And the full faith and credit definitions, appreciating the work that the debt management team is doing on those definitions, I think it would be important to, in terms of quality of data, to confer with the regular bond council in the state about those, because in with respect to those distinctions of self-supporting and non-self-supporting, that I don't know that I would necessarily follow that. I'm not sure what I would do, but there's
some of them that we reviewed. Well, we actually have a working committee right now that meets routinely to work on these definitions, because we want clear data that everyone understands.
Right.
When we look at what has been entered in the system as full faith and credit, and sometimes it would be limited tax bonds, right? So they pledge their full faith and credit, limited tax.
These are all marketing naming conventions,
right?
To be quite frank about it.
And so we are actually, and we're reviewing the security type, and we will be proposing some changes to the attorneys.
Okay.
Because we want to consolidate the bond tracker system. There are other ways that we can distinguish mm-hmm. certain items. We don't have to lay them all out in security types.
Right.
And sometimes we're confusing security types with, issuance type. Like, did they place it, privately or publicly? So when there's a private loan, some entities are putting it in as other mm-hmm. in the security type feature, which is not what we want.
Right.
Okay, so we're definitely working on mm-hmm. clarification of these, but this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
And so we have a task force on our team that's working on this. We've worked through the purposes where we've given examples of the purposes. So we have a purposes sheet, and now we're going through the security features. What is an appropriation debt? Leases were being placed under other category. Well, leases can be considered appropriation for the most part, right? And so we've combined, we're combined thinking of combining leases, appropriation, and certificates of participation under the same category as appropriation. They're payable, but they're subject to annual budgeting requirements.
Maybe we should see what Sharon's question is.
Yes, Sharon.
Sharon.
Oh, well, thanks. And I was just going, apologies, I like have half a voice right now, so hopefully you can hear me. And I, even when I was asking the question, so it sounds like I raised a good question that needs some clarification. And I had really raised my comment initially, just wanting to make sure as we're releasing a report to the public to make sure, like, I thought it was going to be a simple little, oh, let's just put a footnote at the bottom. To clarify the difference. So that was my perspective from my initial comment, was just wanting to make sure if a member of the public, or maybe it's someone from, you know, a local government, maybe a smaller government, doesn't issue a lot of debt, doesn't have a lot of experience with different types of issuances, just to help them understand the information in the report. So that was kind of where I was coming from, but it sounds like that may have spurred a lot of other good discussion.
Yeah, it was not lost on us because we received an email a couple months ago asking, well, what does this mean? What category do we put this in? So we started purpose, and then we said, well, we need to do security type, because security type is not bond type. And bond type is something else. And so
now, particularly because under the local government statutes, in ORS Chapter 287A, it is the case that general obligation bond is clearly defined as a voter-approved credit. Right. But full faith and credit, in air quotes, is one, not a defined term in terms of the type of bond issuance, and two, you can issue under 287A revenue bonds that are full faith and credit debt, or that are truly revenue, enterprise revenue secured debt. There's a whole spectrum of things. So appreciating the work you all are doing, the lawyers will definitely have some views to help clarify things. So
I'm sure this is our subject.
Because it is a constant thing in motion, and lots of people have different views on it, as well as the marketing side of it. As Sharon, you know, from, you know, great debates about what to issue under and how, and the provisions of 271, 390 are quite limiting in some respects, whereas the revenue bond provisions of 287A are quite broad.
In the back of this report are the bond tracker definitions. Mm-hmm. And this report that we're doing, this annual report, is also evolving from, it was a bond tracker based report previously. Right. And now it's becoming less of bond tracker terms and more general terms about issuance. And so as the bond tracker terms evolve,
then so will the report.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for now, the definitions, it's not called definitions, but we could call them bond tracker definitions, mm-hmm, in the back for the Appendix A. Mm-hmm. Because that's how they're reported in bond tracker. And we thank everybody who uses the bond tracker system for not complaining too much about it, because I know it's very difficult. It's difficult for us. It's difficult for me, because whenever I call and I run one report and see something, I say, hey, guys, come on. This is not what we're supposed to be seeing.
I feel the same.
Right.
So we do appreciate that. So Sharon, we just went through a lot to talk about your question on the N and the S. And I think one other comment you had was, we did fix the numbers, I believe, that you commented on.
Yes, we did.
And thank you for that.
There was also one about the GIS mapping, the coloring on the GIS mapping. I will let you know that DAS does that for us. They don't really explain what the coloring is, but because of the tax measure 5, it's pertaining to the information from the Department of Revenue. And according to the Department of Revenue, the red is the part that is not, they're not able to fully verify the tax measure coding within that district. I will get clarification between DAS and Department of Revenue to clarify exactly what the coloring means and especially what the red means. Okay, it's so never been asked in the past, but
let's go and get a footnote and for what the various colors mean.
And is that table sourced to DAS and DOR rather than?
It's from them.
Sorry, clarifying my comment. The data that's being presented, if it's not coming from Treasury or debt tracker, you should indicate a source of payment.
Yeah. We will add that. That is
correct. Sharon, you had a question?
Oh, I was trying to, I mean, Chris, you work with me, you'll appreciate, like, I was trying to follow the rules. Like, I didn't want to just, like, jump in. Yeah. So I've been trying to raise my hand. I was trying to, like, figure out what the colors meant, but I could, I was kind of struggling over it.
Yeah.
The other item I looked at, because I've kind of been trying to go like back and forth, on page 20 of the Word doc, where it has the table of the municipal advisors by volume, it looks like that comment. So keep.
It's backwards. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, yeah. It looked like the one that went out today. I think it's still, I think that's still backwards. So the words in the knit paragraph say it was PFM followed by Piper and then SDAO, but it's flip-flopped in the table.
I'm sorry, what is this? So the table and the language don't match, and we need to go in and change the auto data within our data sheets to fix it. So Colin and I will fix that.
It's attributing the wrong information.
No, it's not the wrong information. It's just not matching. The table is not matching the language.
So is Piper the lead underwriter?
No.
Municipal advisor.
Yeah, it's public financial management in volume.
Is this from the, this information is from the, from an outside source?
No, this is from Bond Tracker. This is municipal advisor information from Bond Tracker. Okay. It's just the language and the chart, because we have the chart, the table set up as volume, not by, we have it set up as number, not by volume, but the language is by volume. So we need to switch it in the data sheet.
Okay.
So Colin and I will fix that because it's on the automatic under his formula.
Okay. So, did you understand that, Sharon, what she just said?
Yeah, I was totally not.
It's flipped.
I was not reading it. Like cross-referencing that way. So yeah, I got you now.
Thank you for the catch.
I'm thinking we could also throw none in the bottom, because one of the things is a lot of local government issuers are not using financial advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we should just throw them at the bottom.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what does none versus other mean? Is other just other? There's just two firms, and so they're not broken out separately.
That's good. They're choosing that. That's
It just depends on who entered it into the contractor system.
Gotcha.
So we can fold and other into the same category. And those are the things we're looking to change.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
We don't want none and other. We want one single other.
Yeah. we'll see if we can get them combined. Yes.
Okay. That should be fairly straightforward.
Yes. I got that written down. Thank you.
And just pausing for a moment, I see a few more folks have joined. I don't know if Commissioner Nava was among those folks. I know he was going to be running late from another meeting.
Yep, I'm here. Thank you. Apologies. We got budget next week, so it's very busy. I appreciate your patience with me.
Completely understood. Thanks so much. Budget is a top priority.
So given the questions we have, I might want to change my recommendation and have us send out a revised report, which includes all these changes. Mm-hmm. And then perhaps Chair Reynolds, I don't know if you can conduct an approval by email.
Sure, I think that would be perfectly appropriate, and we'll give the members that are here, plus those that are not able to be here, one last look and a little extra time.
Yes.
To review and raise any other questions, so that'd be great.
When would you like the revisions?
We will.
Yeah, you all should coordinate on that. I think given the upcoming Memorial holiday, Memorial Day weekend holiday, I think if members could be sort of on the lookout to be, you know, taking action after that holiday, that would be timely, because folks tend to disappear.
May 30.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Since I'll be honest,
I'm May 31. There you go. Yeah, maybe target the first week of June for the final approvals. That give everybody a little bit of breathing.
Thank you so much. And also, you mentioned a follow-up meeting.
Yes, I think that we should schedule a follow-up meeting, and we can coordinate that
at the end of this meeting.
I think probably maybe by email afterwards. Okay. Sure. to coordinate for commissioners to find their times, especially since Commissioner Yancey isn't on the phone. I want to be better on the meeting. I want to be sure it is scheduled at a time when he can participate, since I think that the purpose of that would be to just touch further on some of the observations you were sharing, Jacqueline, with respect to the OSBG, and just to get input from the community as a whole about those matters. So I think that
maybe later in the summer we can do that by email.
Yeah, well, we should do that by email and look to schedule times after folks wrap up their budget season and have some availability.
We'll just do a Teams
meeting. Yeah.
And sorry, the next version will be a redline version though, correct?
Yes, of this current version. Yeah.
Perfect.
Great. All right. Anything else with respect to the report summary or otherwise? No. Okay. Well, then we'll move to the changing landscape for municipal disclosure item of the agenda. I am slated to talk a little bit about this, but I'll also look to Jacqueline to provide some commentary specifically. You know, recently, the Securities and Exchange Commission held a municipal disclosure conference in Washington, D.C. That disclosure conference webcast, the conference was held on Wednesday, May 10th. And that conference webcast archive is now available online on the SEC's webpage. And to the extent you enjoy geeking out over municipal disclosure matters, please warm your favorite bond counsel's heart and listen in. And among other things, you'll see that Jacqueline was there as well, getting it in real life, in real time, all the details. And so I was going to touch a little bit on one component of that discussion, which is the Financial Data Transparency Act, that this material will come around for folks, was touched on during the meeting, and just really to call attention to, for the community's benefit to it, there is time here, but you know, this act was passed at the end of December 2022, and ultimately the goal of the act is to provide users with an easier way to view, access, and explore data, and is really going to focus on you know, highly technical word searchable functions in for everything that you're filing on Emma. And, you know, ultimately, as we've heard today in the meeting, you know, technology upgrades and making sure that the data you're filing conforms with technology requirements is a expensive endeavor for your own IT departments, for your outside professionals, whether they be underwriters, municipal advisors, or bond counsel, all of everybody ensuring those filings are made in a way that ultimately complies with this act once it is fully implemented in a couple of years, is going to be important. So I would commend to your review this alert. There are other materials out there in the world about it as well as discussion during the conference. And then, you know, reach out to your existing finance team members, to Treasury, to the MDAC for further guidance and questions about it as things are implemented. It has a lead time, so there's time to prepare, but as we all know, time flies and it'll be here before we know it. And Jacqueline, anything on that or otherwise from the conference?
Yeah, so one of the presenters at the conference was Ben Watkins from the state of Florida. And essentially, they have implemented a system to collect data in uniform data from various entities across the state. And he mentioned they had over 2,300 local jurisdictions. But it appears that Florida had in place for more than three decades a uniform taxonomy, which is a uniform set of accounting standards that were used not only by the state, but by local governments. And local governments were required to send their data into the state. Mm-hmm. So they had that in place. And so when they look to conform to this new act, they had to receive additional budgetary authority for now state personnel collecting. The data was already in-house, but still having to move the data into this format that is required. And that costs the state about $2.5 million in the aggregate. And the state determined to do that rather than have the local governments do it at each level. So the local governments have the taxonomy, they send their data to the state, and now the state aggregates it for the various entities. He was very, although he was not pleased with the requirement, he thinks it's a lot of work for a lot of nothing. That was, to put it mildly. But still, I think at the end of the day, we're moving into a new world of data transparency. Yes. I don't think we can avoid it because corporations are currently doing it. There's this XBRL technology that's out there that's being used by corporations. Unfortunately, municipalities are not like corporations, and we don't roll up our subsidiaries into one corporate entity. That's not how municipalities work. And so at this time, Treasury here has a responsibility for the state's disclosure.
Right.
We enter into interagency agreement to provide disclosure. So some of the requirements and resource requirements will rest with Oregon State Treasury. I've already started alerting management here that we will have to do something. I haven't told them what we're going to do. That's forthcoming. But also we need the cooperation of the agencies, because each agency of the state reports their data separately after the state's financials. So what this means now is not only will we be responsible for the disclosure of the state, but we'll be responsible for the disclosure of the state in a different format than we had historically been doing. I think also, from a practical standpoint, it makes sense, like the state of Florida did, to collect the information from the local governments as well, which means ensuring that there is a taxonomy across the state that local governments can conform to. I know that we have the state accounting reporting system, SARS, but I'm not sure how consistent that is with local government reporting. So this is the first part of our conversations about this, because and the question is, do local governments think they can do this? From our experience, there's some of the smaller local governments it would be challenging because they have a lot of turnover. Sometimes the leadership is voluntary. It's they may not be aware of what's required. So I think it would be, I think there might be some benefit for the local governments to use whatever platform the state develops. At the same time, we're in such with an infancy stage, and we need to bring it to the state agency. DAS handles the reporting for the state as a whole. They compile the state's financial report. Mm-hmm. I would think that they could play a role in aggregating data of also the local governments. And I know that currently, are you okay, Sharon? I know that currently all local governments must submit their financials to the Secretary of State, mm-hmm. and that's on the Secretary of State website. So it would be perhaps something similar, but then now taking it in data bits,
right,
bytes, and moving it to a system, not just a PDF of the report. And so I understand it's a considerable amount of work. It requires a uniform chart of accounts that all entities can use, and it requires technology to present that to the powers that be. Regulatory bodies.
Right. And I think those are all great points, Jacqueline, and knowing that local governments have to file their financials through the SAR system and so forth. That's an important fact. I think as a whole, local governments need to familiarize themselves with this. I know GFOA is looking at this as well, because this affects not only financial CAFR reporting, but you know, everything else that you're filing on, Emma. And I would not presume that Treasury is looking to become the central repository for state for local government EMMA filings. So I think there's a lot of considerations here, both for Treasury as a whole as you deal with the state level agency reportings, and then for every local government debt issuer that has continuing disclosure obligations to understand over time what this is going to mean for the content that they are individually responsible for putting up on EMMA and working with their IT folks to achieve those necessary standards. Because it is not the case that, frankly, I don't think that a local government wants to have Treasury filing their data, nor does Treasury want to file their data.
It doesn't take away the EMMA responsibilities.
Right.
It adds new responsibilities.
Yes, precisely. It adds responsibilities of the type of data content that's being filed. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so the question is it best to have one system that has the data and folks can just upload it to, you know, upload it to EMMA? Ben Watkins thought it was successful for the state of Florida. The state of Michigan is also now in the process of trying to map out their process for both the state and local governments. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take a combined effort.
Yeah.
It's really, from my opinion, quite an extensive task, but we are moving in a technologically driven world.
Right.
Some of the questions that came up during this meeting was, you know, how do you evaluate data that's aggregated? So if you have, say, City of Portland and all their various entities are aggregated and you see one debt number, what, you know, is a rating agency or an investor is going to understand what that debt number is? Mm-hmm. Has it been aggregated to the extent that it's lost its importance?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could have water debt, you could have geo debt, you could have all sorts of debt with different credit structures. And so the municipal debt taxonomy is going to be very different from a corporate.
Of course.
You know, there's so many sectors to cover. There's so many types of difference in information that's required. If you're a transportation issuer, if you're a water and wastewater issuer,
right.
If you're a healthcare issuer, all the information's different.
Right.
So we will be. It's exhausting thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I commend you for paying attention and being aware of it. I think it's going to be something that, as you say, that's going to require coordination across a number of issuers and whatnot. And I think, you know, unless commissioners on the line have questions about it, I think we've, for the moment, rung the bell and raised it and would encourage all of you to share this with your respective League of Oregon Cities, Association of Counties, special districts and school districts in absentia to make sure folks are aware of it and are coordinating with their respective IT folks to start to explore these issues and gain some understanding and knowledge about it. I think that brings us to the public comment or other business agenda item. Going first to the commissioners, do any of the commissioners have any comments or other business they would like to raise?
See no hands, Chair.
And to the extent there are any other members of the public on, is there anything that any public comment that any member, any attendee would like to raise? Great. All right. Well, with that, I'll adjourn the meeting and would ask that all commissioners please watch their emails first for the updated clean and redline version of the report for review with final sign off to be provided via email for release and publication. And then separately, we will also be working to coordinate a follow-up meeting that we're sure gets out with adequate notice to all members of the public finance community for discussion with respect to the OSBG component of the report and discussion about its how it functions and considerations related to the program.
Okay.
Great.
Stop recording.
Thank you.